brethren, I endorse fully the things that these brethren, especially my counselors, have talked about to you tonight. This matter of the very strict, careful interviews, we hope you will be most careful with them. It's a great joy to greet the priesthood of the church this glorious night. All over the world, we gather to worship the Lord and give Him praise. My brothers in the priesthood, it was a great thrill recently to have tens of thousands of the sisters of the church assemble in hundreds of places around the world in a special meeting for the women of the church. You will have had your own reports from your wives and sisters and mothers and daughters about the meeting. We feel gratified that we were able to hold the meeting and that technology made it possible. We love the women of the church. We have great respect for them. In following up on that event, I want to counsel you as sons and brothers, fathers and husbands. As you serve with the women of the church, follow what Paul said when he urged Timothy to entreat the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. We men of the priesthood ought to so do. We must be different than other men, and I'm sure most priesthood holders are. Paul's suggestion that we treat older women as if they were our mothers and younger women as if they were our sisters, and to do so with all purity, is excellent instruction. Men of the world may disagree. They may disregard women or see them only as objects of direction or as someone to be used on selfish purposes. Let us, however, be different in our conduct, in our relationships with the women. Peter urged us to give honor unto our wives. It seems to me we should be even more courteous to our wives and mothers, our sisters and our daughters, than we are to others. When Paul said that man who did not provide for his own and those of his own household was worse, that man was worse than an infidel. I like to think of providing for our own as including providing for them with affection, security, as well as economic security. When the Lord told us in this dispensation that women have a claim on their husbands for their maintenance, I like to think of maintenance as including our obligation to maintain loving affection and to provide consideration and thoughtfulness as well as food. President Lee once observed that the needy around us may need friendship and fellowship as well as food. I sometimes think our own Latter-day Saint women are needy just because some of us are not as thoughtful and considerate of them as we should be. Our pantries can be filled with food, and yet our sisters can be starved for affection and recognition. Let us, brethren, support the sisters of our household in their church callings, as they so wonderfully support us. Let us not neglect them simply because they sometimes go on being good even when they are neglected. Let our homes be filled with praise and commendation for all those of our household. Let us also, brethren, not get so concerned with our priesthood peers, those men we are associated with in our church assignments, that we neglect our eternal companions, for our association with our wives will be forever. Our Father in heaven was gracious enough to give to us for our pleasure and convenience all life on earth. Let me read to you from his personal statements. Quote, "And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And he had, and it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day." I read at the priesthood meeting at the last conference the words of the verse of one of our songs years ago, "Don't kill the little birds," with which I was familiar when I was a child growing up in Arizona. I found many young boys around my age who, with their flippers and their slings, destroyed many birds. In primary and Sunday school, we sang the song, "Don't kill the little birds that sing on bush and tree." All through the summer days, their sweetest melody. As I was talking to the young men at that time all over the world, I felt that I should say something more along this line. I suppose in every country in the world there are beautiful little birds with their beautiful plumage and their attractive songs. I remember that my predecessor, President Joseph Fielding Smith, was a protector for these feathered and other wildlife creatures. While President Smith at one time was in the Wasatch Mountain area, he befriended the creatures from the hill and the forest. He composed four little verses as follows, and opposite each he drew a little picture of the mountain squirrel. First, he wrote, "This is a little chopper squirrel up in the mountains high. He begs us for some grain of corn. With thanks, he says goodbye." And then the bat was next. "This is the little Tommy bat who flies around at night. He eats the bugs and skeeters too, which is a thing quite right." And then he came to the Bambi deer. "This is little Bambi deer who comes to cabin homes. She licks the salt we feed to her and on the mountain roams." And then the bird creatures. "This our little feathered friend who sings for us all day. When comes the winter and the cold, he wisely flies away." Now, I also would like to add some of my feelings concerning the unnecessary shedding of blood and destruction of life. I think that every soul should be impressed by the sentiments that have been expressed here by the prophets. and not less with reference to the killing of innocent birds or the wildlife of our country that lives upon the vermin that are indeed enemies to the farmer and to mankind. It is not only wicked to destroy them, it is a shame, in my opinion. I think this principle should extend not only to the bird life, but to the life of all animals. For that purpose, I read the scripture where the Lord gave us all these animals. Seemingly, he thought it was important that all these animals be on the earth for our use and encouragement. President Joseph F. Smith said also, "When I visited Yellowstone National Park a few years ago, I saw in the streams and the beautiful lakes birds swimming quite fearless of man, allowing passers-by to approach them as close almost as tame birds, and having no fear of them. And then I saw droves of beautiful deer feeding along the side of the road, as fearless of the presence of men as any domestic animal. It filled my heart with a degree of peace and joy that seemed to be almost a foretaste of that period hoped for, when there shall be none to hurt and none to molest in all the land, especially among all the inhabitants of Zion. These same birds, if they were to visit other regions inhabited by man, would, on account of their tameness, become more easily a prey to the gunner. And same may be said of those beautiful creatures, the deer and the antelope. If they should wander out of the park, beyond the protection that is established there for these animals, they would become, of course, easy prey to those who are seeking their lives. I never could see why man should be imbued with the bloodthirsty desire to kill and to destroy animal life. I've known men, and they still exist among us, who enjoy what is to them the sport of hunting birds and slaying them by the hundreds, and who have come in after a day's sport, boasting of how many harmless birds they had the skill to slaughter. And day after day during the season when it is lawful for them to hunt and kill the birds, having had a season of protection and now a happy ending of that danger, and you may hear their guns early in the morning and on the day of the opening of the season, as if great armies had met in battle, and the terrible work of the slaughtering of innocent birds goes on. I do not believe that any man should kill animals or birds unless he needs them for food, and then he should not kill the innocent birds. They're not intended for food for man. I think it is wicked for men to thirst in their souls to kill almost everything which possesses animal life. It is wrong, said President Smith. I have been surprised at prominent men whom I have seen whose very souls seem to be athirst to the shedding of animal blood. One of the poets stated in this connection, "Take not away the life you cannot give, for all things have the equal right to live." And I might add there also, because God gave it to them, and they were to be used only, as I understand, for food and to supply the needs of men. It is quite a different matter when a pioneer crossing the plains would kill a buffalo to bring food to his children and his family. There were also those vicious men who would kill buffalo only for their tongues and skins, permitting the life to have been sacrificed and the food also to have been wasted. When asked how he governed so many people, the prophet Joseph Smith said, "I teach them correct principles, and they govern themselves." We look to the prophet Joseph Smith for proper teaching. He said once, "We crossed the Embarrass River and encamped on a small branch of the same about 1 mile west. In pitching my tent, we found 3 Massasaugas, or prairie rattlesnakes, which the brethren were about to kill. But I said, 'Let them alone, don't hurt them. How will the serpent ever lose his venom, while the servants of God possess the same disposition and continue to make war upon him? Men must become harmless before the brute creation will. And when men lose their vicious dispositions and cease to destroy the animal race, the lion and the lamb can dwell together, and the sucking child may play with the serpent, and that in safety.' The brethren took the serpents carefully on sticks and carried them across the creek. I exhorted the brethren not to kill a serpent, bird, or any animal of any kind during our journey unless it became necessary in order to preserve ourselves from hunger. Now, my brethren, young and old, there's another matter I wish to mention. I wish to read for you a verse from your serious thought. The verse is called Keeping Clean, and is in somewhat the same area as some of the other brethren have talked about. When you tell a filthy story, do you ever stop to think what impression you have made upon the crowd? Do you think the boys enjoy it? Do you think, because they laugh, that you have sufficient reason to be proud? Do you know that you exhibit all that is within your soul? When the filthy story passes from your tongue, it reveals your own defilement. It proclaims your ignorance. It disgusts all decent boys who love real fun. Do you think that you exhibit any real common sense when you show the crowd how rotten is your mind? Do you know that you dishonor both your parents and your friends? Think it over, boys, and that is what you'll find. Be a little choice in language. Be a little more refined. If respect of those around you, you would win, you will have a great advantage over those who are inclined to go through life in filth and slime and sin. Brethren, let us think about these things. Ponder them in our hearts. Live worthily. Keep the commandments. Honor your priesthood, and the Lord will love and bless you. And as his servant, I leave my love and blessing with you. I want to mention one other matter before closing, and that is, we've been talking about the great missionary program, which Brother Richards mentioned in the first of the meeting. We have some 26,606 missionaries as of now. Every week they are growing and increasing. There are many areas, many states, nations, where we have not been able to get in, get visas, or get passports. And it is very important, if we are to fulfill the responsibility given to us by the Lord on the Mount of Olives, to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, then we will need to get an open door to these many nations. I mentioned them the other day, many of them, to the brethren in the regional representatives meeting. We've hardly scratched the surface. We need far more missionaries, and we need more countries that will think of us as being their friends and will give us an opportunity to come into their nations and give to their people the finest thing in the world, the gospel of Christ, that can be their salvation and their great happiness. I'm hoping that every man and woman and boy listening to me this night will make it a solemn practice in their regular lives that they will pray constantly for this great blessing, to bless the brethren that are making a special effort to reach the leaders of these nations and to convince them we have only good for their people. We will make them good citizens. We will make them good souls. We will make them happy and joyous and good patients in their states. I hope that every family in holding home evening, Monday night, every Monday night, without fail, this will be one of the strong points that will be brought before them. And the father and the mother and the children in their turns will offer prayers which will be centered around this very important element, that the doors of the nations might be opened to us, and then secondly, that the missionaries, the young men and women of the church, may be anxious to fill those missions and bring people into the church. In China, we have 900 million people. Yesterday after the meeting, about 50 little Chinese people came in to see me. I took them all through the building of the church offices and gave them a very thorough program for them. And then I told them, we've been talking about China today. That was the day of the regional representatives meeting. We've been talking about China. We've learned of their good qualities and that there seems to be a spirit of the Lord brooding over them to bring the possibility of the gospel to them. I asked all of those Chinese people who were here at conference, will you guarantee that in all your home evenings and in all your family prayers and in all of your public prayers that you will mention this to the Lord? Now, I know he can do it without our help, but I think he would want to know that we were interested in it and that we would appreciate it greatly. So I'm hoping that beginning now that the prayers of the saints will be greatly increased from what they might have been in the past, that we never think of praying except we want to pray for the Lord to establish his program and make it possible that we could carry the gospel to his people as he has commanded. And that is my deep interest and great prayer to you, that this will be accomplished. And now, in closing this meeting, I wish to express appreciation for all that has been said by these beloved brethren who have spoken. And now we will close this meeting, and I bear my testimony to the truth of it and to the greatness of it in the name of Jesus Christ.